the United States is simply headed in the wrong direction. The Torah is the foundation of our legal system, and the Judeo-Christian ethic was the inspiration of our founding fathers, our Constitution, and our laws. If our nation is to survive as a shining light of freedom, we must return to these Torah-based principles. We welcome you now to the Restoring Our Nation broadcast, hosted by Texas attorney and Bible scholar Larry Meadows and Rabbi James Trim.
I'm Larry Meadows.
And I'm James Trim, and you're listening to Restoring Our Nation. And this week, we're going to talk about our Fourth Amendment protections in the Bill of Rights, and the importance of the Fourth Amendment, and our protection from illegal search and seizure, and how it is one of the major keystones in our constitutional protections that stand between us and government abuse and potential government abuse. Here with Larry Meadows, who happens to be my attorney. He's also my co-host here on Restoring Our Nation. In fact, I consider this more Larry's show than mine, because he's a practicing attorney here in Texas. And Larry just recently represented me in a case which actually involved some key Fourth Amendment issues. Larry, are you there, Larry?
Right. Well, one of the issues were, in your case, can a code enforcement officer, without a search warrant, just walk into someone's backyard and start taking pictures and use those as evidence to prosecute for alleged code enforcement violations?
Go ahead.
Well, I think we found some cases that say no. I'm generally out, just based on general case law related to police or law, technical law enforcement, the answer would be no. But we code enforcement is also law enforcement as well. So
exactly.
Anyway, I thought it was, it was interesting. Maybe, James, tell some of the details. You lived it out. I just,
Thank you, Larry, for living it out with me. But yeah, I'll explain the situation that I was in. But I'll just keep it basic, because it could be a much longer story. I got two tickets from code enforcement. We've been having ongoing problems with code enforcement on ridiculous things in the past. Like, I have a pear tree in my front yard complaining that I had rotting fruit in the ground that was falling from the pear tree. Okay? Things of that nature. And so we had no idea
why.
That
in itself is ridiculous.
Yes.
And I've seen case law related to that issue. If it's a natural occurring event like that, it is not a code violation. How could it offend? It may offend urbanity, but it doesn't offend nature.
Yeah, it's what they call an act of God. So I'm I had a situation back in the spring where I had moved. I was in the process of moving a couple of antique bedstands that my mother, who was an antique collector, had left me. And the bedstands were somewhere between 200 and 300 years old, colonial style bedstands. These were tied, they had a rope that would tie them together down at the bottom that the mattress would rest on, and over a period of time the rope would lose tension and they would have to tighten it up, which is where we get our phrase sleep tight from. And I had intended to move these bedstands, which were disassembled, to a storage facility, but I didn't have room in my vehicle to do it, and a friend of a friend said that they would come by and let us use their pickup truck to move them to the storage facility. Well, it fell through. They didn't come through for us, and it didn't happen. And so at the time, we weren't sure if they were going to come later. We were communicating with them through our friend, and it just never seemed to happen, and we eventually had to find someplace else to put the bedstands. In the meantime, they were in my front driveway, leaned against my garage, and so I went out and put a canvas over them to protect them from the elements, and also so that somebody passing from the street, I had them behind my car for one thing, so they were somewhat obscured. You know, you couldn't necessarily see them very well because they, you know, they were behind where my car was parked, and they were also protected from the elements. And if somebody did see them, they wouldn't necessarily know what they were. Now, the average person probably wouldn't know what they were anyway, but I didn't want anybody, you know, stealing them. Now, I live in a good neighborhood, so that was, you know, pretty unlikely anyway. You know, shouldn't, you know. So I put the canvas over them, and code enforcement took a picture of these, and we did not know at the time. We got a ticket from code enforcement saying that we had trash and rubbish in our front yard. They didn't even say front yard. They just said we had trash and rubbish. We were in violation of the trash and rubbish ordinance. Well, that didn't make sense to us because there wasn't any trash or rubbish, you know. So we called and set a date for we called to set a trial time on the ticket, and figuring, well, we'll get there and we'll find out what it is that they think is trash and rubbish, and we'll straighten this out. And 10 days later, we got another ticket before the court date even came. We got another ticket for violating the trash and rubbish ordinance. And this is just, you know, starting to get a little bit irritating, you know, because we don't even know what's going on here. Now we've got two tickets. And a few days later, a sign is put in our front yard by the city saying that our grass is too high in violation of the grass ordinance. They didn't write us a ticket on it, but they put a sign in our front yard, and the sign said it's unlawful to remove this sign until you've taken care of it. I don't even think our grass was more than 8 inches. I couldn't find any that was, and it was shorter than the grass across the street, and it was the same height as the grass next door. So we're like, what's this all about, you know? And we went ahead and mowed the lawn and removed the sign. And then about 2 months later, and the trial date still hasn't come, about 2 months later, my kids come and get me and say, Dad, there's men working in our backyard. So I go out in my backyard, and there's three guys with some landscaping company working on taking out vegetation and mowing my grass, you know, and mowing my grass and trimming the weeds and whatnot. Now, they just barely got started. And I'm like, who are you? Well, the city sent us here. And I'm like, the city sent you here? Do you have a court order? You know, a warrant or a court order to be here in my backyard doing this? Well, no, we don't have a court order. We don't need one. I said, you sure do. And so I went in and I called Larry, and Larry said, they need a court order. You know, they got to have a warrant or a court order or something. They can't just do that. Cause the idea, of course, is that the city was going to send me a bill for it. So I went out and told them that they needed to leave. And so they called their boss and they started packing up to leave, and they said, well, we'll be right back with a police escort. And I said, not without a court order, you won't, you know. And so they left, and I talked to code enforcement on the phone, and they said, well, we'll get a court order next week. So at that point, I called Larry, and I said, Larry, this has got to stop. I don't know what's going on, but it's I need help. I've got to have some legal representation here, because it's not going to stop. And this, there had been some history of stuff even before this that I won't even go into, but she's like, this has got to stop. And so, Larry agreed to represent me, and he notified the city that he'd be representing me, and he filed a number of motions. And he wasn't able to be there that week. One of the motions was a motion to, continuance, right, because he was in another trial and couldn't be there on that date. And we showed up, and the judge did go ahead and grant his motion for continuance. And the code enforcement officer showed up with papers. She wanted the judge to sign, giving her a court order to mow my lawn and stuff. And I said, Judge, we don't even have an outstanding ticket on lawn mowing. And she says, well, we put a sign in their yard. And I said, yeah, and we've mowed it since then. And the judge didn't sign her order. And he granted the continuance, and we came back on the date for the continuance with Larry. He filed a bunch of motions. That's another story I don't want to go into, but he filed a bunch of motions, and we got set for a jury trial. And one of the interesting things that came up in setting this thing for a jury trial is that the first state, you know, there's municipal courts, they don't do jury trials every day. So they do them like maybe once a month or every 2 months. They have certain dates marked out on their calendar for it. Well, the first date that they came up with, Larry was wrapped up in a major trial in another city. And so then they came up with the next date. And I'm keeping sort of a long story short, but the next date was Rosh Hashanah. And I wasn't available for Rosh Hashanah for obvious reasons. And the judge says, well, what's Rosh Hashanah? And I said, well, it's a Jewish holiday. And he says, well, are the Tarrant County courts open on that day? And everybody's like, yeah. And he goes, well, then we're having trial. You'd be here on that date. And I said, are you? And I was just outraged at this point. And I said, are you kidding me? You won't recognize a Jewish holiday? The Christians don't have to be here on Easter or Christmas. You know, you close down for those days. Why should mine be different? And at that point, he went ahead and gave in and reassigned it to the next date after that, which was November 3rd.
He had to. Well, let me just interject. First of all,
go ahead. Let's take a break and come back and pick up on that. So we'll be right back after this.
Hey, Dad.
What's up, buddy?
You're always on this website.
You mean Nazarene Space?
Yeah, it's the only one you're ever on.
Well, that's because it has a lot to offer.
What do you mean?
Well, when I want to research a topic, there's usually a resource there. Plus, I can chat with my friends, and there's also a brand new radio station.
A radio station?
It sure is. It's the Nazarene Radio Network. I can listen to Bible teachers, talk shows, even music that teaches us all about Yahweh.
That sounds really cool. Is there stuff for kids?
As a matter of fact, little buddy, we're talking about adding programming for families, teenagers, even some dramatized plays that everyone would be interested in.
I think I like that.
Well, Mom and I definitely like that. Good, wholesome, clean programming for the whole family.
No wonder you're always there.
That's right, pal. Let's listen into the show.
Cool.
All right, we're back.
Yeah, we're talking about the judge did not want to give me a continuance so that we wouldn't be having my jury trial on Rosh Hashanah. He did break down and do it, but he initially said no. And Larry was about to interject something pretty important along those lines. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is, first, at this point in the progress of the case, we already had some history with the judge, and one of the things, he didn't like the fact of all the motions that I had originally filed on James's behalf in the case. I'd filed a bunch of discovery motions, or a motion with a bunch of discovery, and he didn't like that, we weren't trying to be litigious. I wanted to know, James wanted to know, what exactly were we facing? What were the real charges? What were the allegations? You know, what was considered trash and rubbish and all that? Anyway, so we had already had history, and at this point, I think we were already in at least one or two continuances, and because I had filed one initially, and then they get, like James said, he had said, okay, well, let's do it on this date, but I couldn't. I already had a trial set in another case, and then he brings up Rosh Hashanah. But the whole point being, there's a specific code in the Code of Criminal Procedure that says if an individual is religious, and there's a religious holiday that they observe, they cannot be forced to go to a jury trial or a hearing or a motion, hearing on motions on the day of a religious observance. And that, it doesn't matter whether it's Christian, Muslim, Jewish, you know. So he was going to lose on that one, and that's why he ultimately backed down. But he was just being, I think, contentious with this because of everything that had gone before. Anyway, so we got the trial set for November 3rd.
And then a couple months later, before the trial, this is about 6 weeks to 2 months ago, maybe it was a month ago now, I don't remember the date, but there was a knock at my door, and I go answer the door, and there's four police officers and this code enforcement officer at my door, and they say, we're just going through the neighborhood following up on old code enforcement issues and wanted to know if we could come in and look around. And I said, do you have a warrant? You know, obviously I'm, you know, savvy. That's the first thing I asked. No, we don't have a warrant. Then I'd rather you didn't. And if you don't have a warrant, then absolutely not. And
let me interject. That scenario right there is the exact situation for the Fourth Amendment. Police cannot just willy-nilly, when they feel like they want to, knock at your door and say, hey, can we come in and do just a general blanket search to see how things are going? Yeah. That's the whole purpose of the Fourth Amendment. Yeah. And by the way, as a just generally, while people may consider it, you know, understand the Fourth Amendment related to criminal law, it does relate to criminal law, but that's not the sole purpose of it. Another aspect of the Fourth Amendment has to do with property rights. You know, so yeah, there's the criminal aspect of it, but what it's really based upon is an individual's property rights, meaning the government does not have a right to go in and just generally search through your property and your papers without some cause, without some justification, and hence the warrant justification, meaning law enforcement goes to an independent judge or magistrate and says, hey, there's a crime being committed on this property. We need to go in. And here's the reason why. Under oath, under affirmation, under an affidavit, they say, we believe a crime is being committed, and here's the evidence that we have. But notice that the overarching right that prevents the government from just entering is property rights, meaning a private individual as well as the government cannot just walk on someone else's property and say, hey, I'd like to do a little check in here and make sure everything's copacetic. Anyway, that's the
Exactly. You know, and there's all kinds of reasons for that that don't necessarily have anything to do with criminal privacy. You know, the perfect example of that is recently the TWA screening, where this woman went through the TWA thing and they searched her luggage, and when she got to her destination, she had a little personal entertainment device. And in her luggage, and it had a little note with it that somebody from TWA had put in there saying, get your freak on, girl. And you know, people have a right to their privacy. There's nothing illegal about that, but it's embarrassing. It's just personal, right? You know, so there are these, and also you never know. Fortunately, most police officers are honest, but you also have had, there have historically been situations where the police planted things, and if they can't get in because they have no probable cause to search in the first place, they can't plant anything. And also in this case, it was code enforcement issues. Well, they could come in and nitpick, because the house was built in 59. They could come in and start nitpicking about code enforcement issues and have my house condemned and taken from me. Maybe, I don't know. But, you know, they have no business coming in my house.
Well, with that code enforcement officer, that's a possibility.
Yeah. So, you know, anyway, I said no, but it kind of flipped me out because, you know, it's scary and very intimidating to have not just a police officer, but four police officers and a code enforcement officer at my door. And then they started asking me questions, and I said, well, why are you asking, and I, you know, why are you asking me these questions? And they said, oh, it's just routine. And I said, well, I do have an outstanding code enforcement issue, and it's scheduled for a jury trial, and I have an attorney, and you should be aware of that. You should already be aware of that, and you really shouldn't be questioning me outside the presence of my attorney. If you have questions for me, you need to contact my attorney. And, you know, and if they need to be directed directly to me, then you need to contact my attorney to set up a time that we can all sit down together, you know? Mm. And then they left. And then I was on the phone with Larry, told him what happened. I was kind of panicked. I was flipped at the moment. Larry was like, everything's fine, don't worry. They didn't have a warrant, and they went away. That's the way it works. But they really...
Well, they shouldn't even try.
They shouldn't
even
tried.
They shouldn't even tried.
It was an intimidation.
Well, given the history, they knew what was going on. And that's, you know, in code enforcement, that's what... It was only because of code enforcement urging them to come with her, I think, to intimidate you, in my opinion, because of the pending trial and whatnot.
And maybe because they didn't have enough, and so they were trying to find something.
Right. They didn't, in my opinion.
Or they had.
Now that I really,
yeah.
Yeah. Now that I really look at all the evidence, and, you know, as we talked, you know, this last week, I mean, there was no trash.
They had pictures of lawn furniture and empty trash cans and fertilizer, lawn fertilizers and bicycles and stuff that were, yes, in my backyard, scattered around in a disorganized manner. But there was no trash. It wasn't trash and rubbish and, you know, tin cans. And I did notice one interesting I noticed one interesting thing about the way the ordinance read is that you weren't allowed to have any dirt in your yard. What? My yard is dirt. You know. So anyway, the upshot of this is when we get the discovery. The discovery is not only pictures of these two bedstands in the front of the house, which we kind of suspected that's what it was, but we wanted to be able to turn around and say, hey, that's not trash and rubbish. In fact, it's pretty valuable. It's an antique bedstand. The way the ordinance read, the only thing that they could have tried to use against it in the ordinance, because it wasn't like trash or tin cans or any of the other sorts of things listed in the ordinance, was a catch-all phrase on the end that said anything that was offensive to the senses and contributed to urban blight. And to say that it was offensive to the senses requires witnesses that were offended that will say, I was offended. Excuse me. And also it requires that witnesses can see it. And my backyard's not visible to the public. It's not visible from the street.
Which brings up one of the key points about your case is code enforcement had told you early on that she had complaints.
Yes.
And that's what she was responding to. She had neighborhood complaints, and she had a lot of them.
Yeah.
And then
she even said at one point that we had more complaints than anybody in the city.
And so we show up, James and I, for pretrial hearing, which covers one of the issues that covers on pretrial is discovery. So I talked to the city prosecutor and I said, okay, you know, where's your discovery? And basically she said, well, why don't you just talk to the code enforcement? And one of the first things I asked code enforcement was, I need copies of all the complaints, whatever documentation you have related to complaints, I need that as part of the discovery. And her response was, I don't have any complaints.
Yeah, no complaints. So she kept telling different stories, though, because she was telling other people. In fact, she even said in front of the judge at one point, but I don't think the judge remembered that there were complaints. But this is the importance, people, of having representation. Because without representation, I was just getting rolled right over. But when my attorney, and they knew it was serious, and my attorney comes along and makes discovery motions and says, fine, then we demand to see this.
Complaints.
So, yeah, we demand to see the complaints. All of a sudden, there weren't any complaints. No complaints from the public. It was all coming from code enforcement themselves. And, of course, the element of this ordinance is that catch-all at the end implies the requirement of complaints. It's a poorly written ordinance, too, because the first phrase says it has to be accumulation of these things. And so the way this ordinance is written, somebody could throw trash in their front yard, and as long as it doesn't accumulate, that is to say, as long as they don't add to it, they haven't violated the ordinance. Now, I don't know if that would actually hold up, but that's what the ordinance actually says. The other issue, of course, about the non-visibility is that there were photos in discovery that were taken inside my house. Not inside my house. Inside my backyard. But same law applies. Inside my photographs that were taken in my backyard. And these photographs were actually just photographs of, you know, like a lawn fertilizer spreader, you know, the kind that you roll around and whatnot. We're over time. Let's go ahead and take a break and come back after this.
Hey, this is Jim Morgan from the Nazarene Radio Network. I do two shows, Come Out of Her, My People, and Tutora or Not Tutora, both featured on the Nazarene Radio Network. I want to talk to you today real quick about the Hebraic Roots Bible. This version is the best version I have ever come across, and I have just about every every translation you can get your hands onto. This one is special. Not only is it a full-size Bible, I mean, it's like 8.5 by 11 full-size, okay? But there's plenty of notes in there, cross-references, details, you name it. It is from the original languages, Hebrew and Aramaic. There's no funny business with Greek or anything in there. You just get it straight translation, and that's what it is. It's the truth, simplified for you. Awesome translation. I've never seen anything better. You can go to NazareneSpace.com, that's our owner right there, Nazarene Space, and go there, and you can click the Hebraic Roots version of the Bible, and that'll take you to the website where you can purchase this. There's also plenty of other resources there along the sides of the webpage. You click that, it takes you to lulu.com/Nazarene, in which you can purchase any of these resources, and there's some free downloads. You could also check us out at NazareneMedia.net, where we offer free downloads of MP3s and print material. So be sure to check us out there. I hope you're enjoying the program, and I'm glad to have you as a listener. Thank you very much.
And we're back.
And we're now finally talking about specifically the Fourth Amendment aspect of this case, and that is the photographs of these various items in disarray in my backyard, but ordinary lawn items, were taken by the code enforcement officer in my backyard. Larry, can the code enforcement or police just go into my backyard?
No, not without a warrant. They can't take pictures either. They would have to – let's put it this way. They can physically do it, but it's in violation of the Fourth Amendment of the United States, in violation of the Texas Constitution.
Well, one of the things – go ahead, sorry.
No, I was going to say, one of the things that we had filed was a motion to suppress all those photos because she did not have a warrant, and that evidence cannot be used against you because she did not have a warrant and she did not have probable cause to enter your backyard because she could not see the backyard from the street.
She didn't have a surveillance order, I guess, to –
Well, no. I mean, can't.
One of the things that came up in discussions with the judge, and this was the day before you were able to be there, and I was telling Larry at the time about some of the discussion that the judge was having with her and us, and Larry was like, why was she even entertaining this? Why was the judge even entertaining this? Why didn't you just shut it down? But she pulled out a photograph and said, this was taken from the street. and the edge of the right edge of the photo was right up against the brick wall of my house, okay? So it wasn't taken from the street. It was taken from right up on the side of my house. And so I said, that wasn't taken from the street. You can see the edge of the brick here. This was taken from in my yard along, on the side of my house. And then she says, I have a telephoto lens. Well, there's a tree that blocks that view. In fact, we had other photos we were prepared to introduce that show that there's a tree that blocks that view from the street. So I said, well, I then said, if you have a telephoto lens that see, it must be a, one that sees right through the tree that blocks that view. But even if she did have a telephoto lens, one of the things I found, it was in another state, so we didn't use it, but I'm sure if I looked hard enough, I'd have found a parallel thing in Texas. And that is that using optical enhancement without a court order is surveillance without a court order.
Right. Just so like surveilling a phone.
Yeah.
In theory. I mean, it's in the theory. Same type of... Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I have an expectation of privacy if I'm out of where a person could normally see me without using, say, a telescope or a telephoto lens. So if she did have a telephoto lens, and even if that is what she used, it would have been in violation of the Fourth Amendment as well. So the deal with this case is that they were absolutely impossible to deal with on this case. The prosecution that we were dealing with at the time just would say, we just do whatever code enforcement tells us. And of course, code enforcement aren't lawyers and Fourth Amendment experts, obviously. Right. And so they weren't willing to make any kind of deal on it. And the way this municipal court was running, well, let's just put it this way. Municipal courts are, the judge works for the city. Just keep that issue in mind. I'm not saying anything, just saying, remember, the judge picks up his paycheck from this, and when he looks at that paycheck, it's written to him from the city of whatever. All right, so keep that in mind when you're dealing with a municipal judge. You may find that you have more success when you appeal to a higher court, whatever happens. And in fact, jury trial is a good way to go if you're dealing with a municipal judge. Just my thoughts. Now, I'm not an attorney, so and definitely
in this case,
definitely get yourself representation. And if you're in Texas, I would say definitely get Larry. So we had what I would call a positive outcome, because when we showed up there finally on the morning that it was time to actually do the jury trial, they had a different prosecuting attorney there. And he walks up to Larry and says, you want to talk about this? And Larry's like, yeah. Have you seen these pictures? And he walks off with the guy with the case file that we have, which Larry afterwards says, here, you want the case file? It was an inch and a half thick. I mean, it was an inch and a half thick case file. Photographs, various angles, photographs of adjacent properties for comparison, all kinds of legal documentation and whatnot. We were ready. And I trust what happened is that Larry went off with this guy and started talking to him, and he realized that we were ready.
Right.
And he was suddenly ready to make a deal, frankly, that I couldn't resist. I couldn't turn down. And because, I mean, I could have gone to jury trial, but, anything can happen. And
well, and up to that point, there had been no offer whatsoever from the city prosecutor. None. It was, we're going to pursue these two cases, and that's it. Yeah. All right, fine, whatever. Let's go for it.
Yeah, in fact, Larry went up the first during pretrial. He went to the prosecutor and he said, "What kind of, are you willing to compromise on this?" And the prosecutor says, "Yeah, he can pay the fines on both of them."
What kind of deal is that? That's not a compromise.
Yeah, what kind of deal is that, you know? That's the same deal I get if I go to jury trial and lose. And if the jury then turns around and gives me the maximum penalty. And remember, folks, on a jury trial, they have to get a unanimous verdict. This is in criminal law. They have to get unanimous. You only need one to make a mistrial, at least. You only need one.
Right.
So, this guy was suddenly ready to make a deal. He says, tell you what, we'll drop one of the tickets altogether. And the other one, if you'll plead no contest and take the hit on it, we'll have no fine. And that was a big issue for me because we can't afford the fine. So, no fine. You can just do 20 hours of community service. Well, 20 hours of community service is nothing. As a rabbi, you know, I have no problem going out and doing 20 hours of community service. I mean, that's what my life's about anyway, in a sense. You know what I'm saying? So to go out and do 20 hours of community service sometime in the next couple of months is something I don't mind doing anyway. So... we went ahead and took the deal because, you know, but there was also a little more to it than that, Larry. We did also kind of emphasize that we needed to go our separate directions and this wasn't going to be an ongoing issue.
Right. And I think the city prosecutor understood that, and hopefully that's, I think, the real resolution that I was seeking is,
yeah.
I don't want to be back here again over, you know, code enforcement, you know, saying pears on Trim's yard is rubbish. That's nonsense. I mean, that's, you know, obviously, you know, there was more going on with her than we are aware of, because a lot of these the pictures and allegations were, you know, baseless, really. So
yeah, it was the first thing Larry said to the prosecutor when he walked away with him. I heard him say, "Have you seen these pictures? That's not trash and rubbish." You know, so and I think we emphasized the point that they need to stay out of my backyard.
Yeah.
So
which I did mention to him. I said, "Look, she had no warrant. She went back, took pictures of the backyard," and I think this is the whole point of us bringing up this case on the show today, is the Fourth Amendment and these other rights are real substantial rights that protect against abuses of government, and that's why they were amended the Constitution. This is why they've been part of our legal framework since the founding of the Republic. They are substantial, they are real, and they do have meaning. They're not meaningless. And I think citizens tend to lose sight of the importance of these words and how they do protect us. Don't lose sight that this case is a good example because it really is not a criminal matter. I mean, we're talking about, you know, trash and rubbish in a yard. But at the same time, it does protect a homeowner from, you know, abuses from a, you know, recluse code enforcement officer. Meaning, it doesn't matter whether it's code enforcement or regular police, there's rules that they have to abide by, and they're enforced by the Constitution, by the laws of your state, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, and the laws may differ from state to state. Larry, are we on the third? We're on the third segment, right?
Yes.
So we got one more segment. All right, let's go ahead and we're almost done. Let me add something here in the last minute. The laws in your state may be different. I mean, the Fourth Amendment is there everywhere. In most state, all state constitutions that I know of have a parallel right to the Fourth Amendment in their state constitution as well. The courts. Let's talk about when we get back, because I don't think we have time. But the courts may be a little bit different We're talking specifically here about a case where they went in the backyard and there was no fence and no trespassing sign. So when we come back, we'll talk about what the federal law is and what the specific state issues are here in Texas, but they may be different in your state, so beware of that. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we bring to you two radio personalities, and which you may have heard of, Christopher and JJ Rocks, from Sticks and Stones performing Who Is Me.
I see you're here for your Hebrew lesson.
I'm ready to learn.
Now, the first thing you must understand is that Hebrew and English have many words that sound alike, but they do not mean the same thing.
Sure, I understand.
Now, don't be too quick to say that.
How stupid do you think I am? Wait, don't answer that. It's simple. Some words in Hebrew sound like words in English, but they don't mean the same.
Precisely.
We have that word in English, too. What does it mean in Hebrew?
No. Precisely is an English word.
I didn't come here to learn English. I came here to learn Hebrew, so make it with the Hebrew.
Fine, let's start with me.
You?
No, me.
Fine, we'll start with you.
No, we'll start with me.
Okay, have it your way.
Now, me is who?
You is JJ.
No. Me is who?
You is JJ.
You don't understand.
I don't understand. Did you just say me is who?
Yes, I did. Me is who?
You is JJ.
No, you misunderstand what I'm saying. Tell me about me.
Well, you're a nice enough guy.
No. Tell me about me.
Who?
Precisely.
Precisely what?
Precisely who?
It's precisely whom.
No, me is who.
Don't start that again. Go on to something else.
All right. Who is he?
Who is he?
Yes.
I don't know. Who is he?
Sure you do. You just said it.
I just said what?
He is who.
Who is he?
Precisely.
Again with the precisely, precisely who?
No, precisely he.
Precisely he? Who is he?
Precisely.
And what about me?
Who?
Me.
Who?
What are you, an owl? Me? Who is me?
No, who is he?
I don't understand. Maybe he is me.
No, he is she.
Do his parents know about this?
About what?
About her.
What about her?
That she is he?
No, you've got it wrong. He is she.
Then who is he?
Precisely.
Who?
He.
Me?
Who?
He?
She.
Who is she?
No, who is he?
I don't care who is he. I don't know who is she.
No, that's not right.
How can it not be right? I said it. I was standing here, and I said it. And I know me.
Who?
Who?
Precisely.
Me. Me. Is that the you are talking about? He is me?
No, he is she.
Wait a minute. I'm trying to learn a little Hebrew, and now I can't even speak English. Let me review.
Go ahead.
Now, first you want to know, me is who? And then you say, who is he?
Absolutely.
And then you tell me, he is she.
Precisely.
Precisely. Now look at this logically. If me is who, and who is he, and he is she, don't it stand to reason that me is she?
Who?
She.
That is he.
Who is he? Precisely. I have just about had it. You had me confused. I want to go home. You know what I want. Ma.
What?
I said ma.
What?
Are you deaf? I want ma.
What?
Not what. Who?
He.
Not he. Ma is not a he.
Of course not. Who is he?
I don't know. I don't care. I don't care who is he. He is she. Me is who. Ma is what? I just want to go home and play with my dog.
Fish.
Fish?
Bag is fish.
That's it. I'm out of here.
And we're back.
We're back, and... Larry, some key cases here. This is your aspect, so I'll let you deal with this. But tell us about the U.S. versus Riley and what came out of that.
All right, well, you're going to have to remind me.
Okay. It's in our motion, so if you got the – well, see, I got the case file now, don't I?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll just read this. It says – this is from the filing that we were going to do. It says, numerous cases have concluded that the relevant inquiry is whether the property owner has a reasonable expect privacy in the area. That's the key, is you have an expectation of privacy. Right. You don't have an expectation of privacy with your trash. If you put your trash on the front lawn, expect them to go through it, okay? Right. Because they can, okay? It's in the United States versus Riley, in determining whether a particular area is within the curtailage, the courts are guided by the factors from the United States versus Dunn. That is, one, the proximity of the area claimed to be curtailage to the home. Two, whether the area is included within an enclosure surrounding the home. Three, the nature of the uses of which the area is put. And four, the steps taken by the resident to protect the area from the observance of people passing by. But the Dunn court warned against the mechanistic application of any one factor. Rather, the central component of the curtailage question is whether the area harbors the intimate activity associated with the sanctity of a man's home and the privacies of life, quoting Boyd versus the United States. So, federally, the issue is it an area where you have a reasonable expectation of privacy? And if you have a fenced backyard, and many, many, many people do, perhaps most, in my area most people do, that's it, hands down. Your backyard's
right.
fenced.
It's protected. A privacy fence, right.
It's a cloudy area where there is no fence, but in Texas, Poole versus the state, that court ruled that where there was an unfenced backyard, that the curtailage, the very fact that it was the backyard, made it a reasonable expectation of privacy. And they said, quote, Texas Appellate Court, Texas, the Waco Court of Appeals, they said, we are loath to hold that residents failing to erect a complete enclosure around their backyard no longer enjoy Fourth Amendment protection in their backyard. This type of bright line rule would restrict Fourth Amendment protections to only those capable of affording such enclosures, while those incapable lose privacy interests in their backyards. So, in Texas, your backyard is covered even if it doesn't have a fence. Now, in that case, there was still a no trespassing sign, but there was a case just this last March in the Texas courts, the Cooksey versus Texas, where there was no trespassing sign. And that was kind of a funny case because in that case, a police officer walks around into the backyard of this fellow and he's planting marijuana plants in his backyard. And the police officer says, how you doing? And he stands up and he says, pretty good until now. And here he is surrounded with marijuana plants, so he's very intimidated. And the police come up on him and they ask him to sign a warrant, a waiver giving them permission to search and seize. And they ask him to sign a confession. And he does all that because he's very intimidated and he's surrounded by the evidence at this point. The Texas court threw the whole thing out because they shouldn't have been there in the first place.
No warrant.
And once he was standing there surrounded by the evidence, he was intimidated. So no warrant, no case. So your state may be different, but in Texas, which has some pretty conservative rulings typically,
But again, Texas is also strong on property rights, and that's where the intersection. They're big on law enforcement, and law enforcement does get quite a bit of leeway. But at the same time, Texas is a big property rights state, and so those two intermix, and you get some different type of rulings. And really, what you have to remember, it's going to be a case by case basic, and all these cases are really fact specific. But just use common sense. You're going to have more protection in your home than you are in your backyard. And then you're going to have more protection in your backyard than you are in your car. You know, it just depends on where do you engage in more intimate activity. The more intimate the activity, the more protection the Fourth Amendment or a state constitution is going to protect the that area and activity. And remember, it's not only searching of property, it's also the seizing of evidence and the seizing of persons.
Right. And what's the plain sight rule real quick, and then we'll wrap up?
Well, if law enforcement are just, you know, on patrol and they see a violation, they see, you know, they drive by and they see marijuana, okay, from the street. That would be plain sight. They could go and, you know, go in the backyard and seize that evidence, you know, same, or in a vehicle. They pull someone over on a valid traffic violation, meaning someone's speeding. They walk up to the door of the vehicle and they see a bag of marijuana in the front seat. They can seize the person, arrest the person, and search the vehicle right there because they see, you know, illegal activity or illegal substance in plain sight without, you know, there's no issue of warrant or whatnot because they see the violation themselves. And that's a lot of times that's, you know, what happens with vehicles. But there is a new, I don't know if we have time to talk about, they're related to vehicles. The Supreme Court in 2009 came down with a very important ruling related to searches of vehicle incident to arrest. And they really reined in to some degree the limits of law enforcement searching vehicles after they have arrested someone. Basically, the practice before the Gantt case in 2009 was if someone got arrested and they were driving a vehicle, law enforcement would basically search from the front bumper to the back bumper of that vehicle. And there's rules related to it, but basically the Supreme Court shut that down. And they said, look, if someone is arrested and they're contained and don't have access to the vehicle, unless the search has to do with the arrest, meaning they were arrested for drugs,
and they were high when they were pulled over.
Right. The law enforcement doesn't have carte blanche to search every inch of that vehicle, for example. So,
but they do if they were high when they were pulled over, then they would, right?
Right. If it was a drug charge, then they can search it. But in the Gantt case, what happened was he was pulled over and he was arrested for not having a valid driver's license. But then they went and searched through the entire vehicle and found cocaine in his jacket. The Supreme Court ruled that was an illegal search because the searching at that point he was arrested and he was quickly apprehended and cuffed, so he couldn't have destroyed any evidence or gotten to a weapon or anything, so that wasn't the issue. And them arresting him for an invalid license had nothing to do with them searching the vehicle for other paraphernalia or drugs or whatever. And so the Supreme Court said that was illegal because that was outside the scope. They had no warrant, and they can't just, you know, carte blanche go search every inch of a vehicle if the arrest has nothing to do with searching the vehicle. And in this case, just because he had an invalid license doesn't mean that he had some other illegal paraphernalia in the vehicle. And so the search of the cocaine was thrown out.
Couple more quick issues. One, if they do show up with a warrant, look at what the warrant says because it will be very specific.
It should be very specific.
And if it says that they're looking for a stolen horse and they come in your house and they look at a jewelry box, then that's a problem because the horse couldn't be in a jewelry box.
But at that point, I wouldn't say anything to them. That's just going to be something that a lawyer is going to have to try to get suppressed.
Right.
They find anything in the jewelry box and they're looking for, you know, a stolen horse or whatever.
Right, right. And I don't know if we have time for this, Larry, but if you can answer it quickly. In the Waco situation, I recall that there's hearing that there were two kinds of warrants, basically. There's a knock and a no-knock warrant. And they had a knock warrant at the famous Mount Carmel Waco situation where they were supposed to go knock on the door and give the person an opportunity to peacefully comply with the warrant.
Right.
They did not do that there. They never knocked, and they never intended to do that. And they had some other group that was three men, I think, or two or three men, that were going around the roof on the side of the building throwing flash grenades in. What's the difference there? Can you elaborate on that real quick?
The main point would be, if knocking would endanger law enforcement, and there has to be basis for it, then they don't have to knock. They can just bust down the door. And I'm not I don't know the details of that warrant, why they made it a knock and as opposed to a no knock, but I assume the judge made it a knock because there was children in the building. And it's a religious compound. Yeah, there were weapons, but there was no evidence that they were going to use them against law enforcement, so the judge wisely said, look, there's no reason to bust the door down, knock, and give them an opportunity to give themselves up or open the door.
Because this is Texas. Them. We've got more guns than we have people in Texas, literally.
Right.
So the average Texan owns more than one firearm, the average.
Right, and just the fact, and again, this is Texas. If it was a different state, it may be different, but just the fact that they had weapons is not per se illegal and not per se a danger to law enforcement, particularly in a state when you can drive around with if you have a license to carry a concealed weapon, you can drive around and with a weapon in your vehicle. So it's, Texas is a little different.
Yeah. And when it comes to firearms, of course, every state is very different. So,
right. Yes.
If you have any questions on the Fourth Amendment, email Larry. If you need legal representation, email Larry or contact Larry. And I say that because here Larry has gone to bat for me twice. Both cases gotten what I would have to consider extremely favorable outcomes. He represented us on the Hebraic Roots Version copyright case, and he represented me personally on this issue that I had with the city about whether or not there was a city ordinance being violated. So had it not been for Larry, I think I would have been rolled right over and maybe even felt like I was being driven out of the city, rolled over and then backing up to, and rolling over me, backing up to see if they got me.
That brings up one of the first points I said to you all along is, James, don't you see the writing on the wall? Look, it's Babylon. This is why in Revelation and other places it talks about the beast, because government is a beast. They become a beast. They're uncontrollable. They're insatiable.
They think they can just do anything.
They're a beast. Yeah. you cannot reason with them.
And
we've seen that.
And Larry told me one day, he said, that's part of the reason I became an attorney, is to be somebody that, could stand up for, and, so anyway, if you need an attorney, I would, I just personally recommend Larry. This is not an advertisement or anything, just my personal recommendation. So, and if you have any questions about the Fourth Amendment also as follow up to this, feel free to email Larry at meadows,
like meadows,
llp.com. And he also, I think, has a website for his law practice at www.meadowsllp.com.
Yes.
So you can contact Larry that way. Also, if you want to support this particular broadcast, support Larry's ministry in this broadcast, and Larry also hosts the Beit Lehem broadcast on the Nazarene Radio Network. If you want to support, would like to support that, how would they do that, Larry?
We have a website, www.beit-lechem.org. That's www.bet-lechem.org.
Great. Okay. So and there's a way that you can donate from the website there.
Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll be back next time with more from Larry and myself on Restoring Our Nation. Shalom, everybody.
Shalom. Shalom. Have a good week.